Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. I am Ashley's co-host, Dave. Ashley.
I like that, Dave. New way of introducing me.
Ashley, hello.
Hi, Dave.
How are you?
I'm so fabulous.
You are in a great mood today.
It is a great morning to be alive.
It sure is. Why are you so happy today?
I think because America's Got Talent was on last night.
Oh.
And it's Shark Week.
It is Shark Week.
Uh-huh.
Probably not when people are listening to this. Shark Week is over, but it has been Shark Week. What's your favorite thing about Shark Week?
You know, I can't think of a more powerful creature that even walks the earth. Ever since I was a little girl, like every vacation I went on, I would collect shark teeth and like the postcards that would tell you what like shark they were from.
This is amazing. I wish we had talked about this a couple weeks ago.
But I don't go in the ocean because of Shark Week. Have you seen it? Bull sharks are mean.
I watched Shark Week. It's very, very good. It was good a couple of weeks ago when it was on and I loved it. And we had it on around the clock because my wife is exactly the same as you. Loves sharks, is fascinated by them, but deathly scared of them and will not go in the water. Only Australian in the world who will not go in the water at the beach.
I was going to say, do you just like Shark Week because they talk about Australia a lot?
They do talk about Australia a lot, which is good. It should be called Australia Week, but it's not. It's called Shark Week. But that's not what we're talking about.
Shark Week.
That's not what we're talking about today. Today we are talking about, you've probably experienced this, right? As a teacher, as a ministry leader, when you're communicating and you're up there telling a story that you think is really compelling, but you look down at the audience and you see that students are either checked out or they just don't care what you're talking about.
Yeah, like why don't they think this story is as good as I do?
Why is that?
Well, maybe because I'm not meeting their attention.
Yeah.
Like I have to make what I'm talking about matter more than what they're thinking about or what they're currently doing.
Well, I am sure that just about every person who's ever worked in student ministry has faced this issue. And today we are going to address that. We have some amazing guests on today. Jamie Dickens, who's the director of high school ministry at Buckhead Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Jamie is one of our guests. He's a great communicator who has dealt with this problem. And also Ben Crawshaw, the creative director of XP3 High School. He's going to be sharing some of his thoughts as well. He did a great interview with Joseph Sojourner, a guy who has dealt with this issue as well.
Yeah, I love these guys. They have a lot of experience and I love that, you know, they're raising the flag on this issue because it's something that I think a lot of us can learn from.
Yeah, they have so much experience speaking to students, right? And so they've been through this whole thing before. And speaking of speaking to students, the online resource Speaking to Students is the sponsor of today's pod. They are fantastic friends of the pod. And Ashley, a little worm told me that a little birdie told me that you have something. A little shark told me that you have something to do with speaking to students.
Hey, I was invited to be part of that, and I'm so honored because the guys I got to work with are so passionate about it and the content that they developed and their heart behind it. There's nothing that exists out there like this resource.
Yeah, and I think it's timely because you know, as a communicator, you can often feel like that you're all alone, right? Mm-hmm. That you can feel like you're on a lonely island by yourself, surrounded by sharks.
True statement. And you can also feel like, how do I ever really know if I'm good at what I'm doing? Because
exactly.
The only person who gives me feedback is the person doing my slides.
And nobody talks about this sort of thing, right? We don't talk about it with other communicators. We kind of secretly just wish that everybody would tell us that we were good or that they would give us tips, but nobody ever really does. And this is what I love about this resource because it takes you from your lonely island surrounded by sharks and it puts you into a tribe of other communicators who can support and encourage you. And this is a great resource. And my good friend, Ashley, she appears on this. She does a fantastic job. I've seen some of the videos.
All right.
You are awesome on camera.
Well, thanks.
No, seriously, you totally
It just
are.
Comes natural.
You totally rock it when you're on camera, and you do a fantastic job. But this whole resource is amazing. It's just $24 a month, and for that, you get access not only to the monthly training modules, but also to an exclusive Facebook group where you can get tips and real-time support from some of the most effective student communicators around, like the one and only, I'm going to say your name.
Say my name.
Ashley Bohance. She's huge on this. So all you need to do is visit speakingtostudents.com. She's loving that she sang that song.
I've been waiting to pull that one out. Destiny's Child, it's in my soul.
I teed it up and I knew you just would go there. Speakingtostudents.com, that's where you can get all the information that you need. Well, we're going to jump straight in now. We're going to be hearing from Jamie Dickens. And straight after that, we're going to hear from Ben Crawshaw. He's being interviewed by Joseph Sojourner. So take it away, Jamie Dickens.
You know what's a really cool thought for me is I'm sitting in the back and, you know, there's the part of my brain that's like, what the heck am I even doing here speaking to anybody? But secondly, watching all y'all come in, and I know you're probably involved in communicating or content in some way, and just thinking of the number of students that you represent, like that you're being a voice for Jesus to them on like a weekly basis, you know, even maybe twice a month. And I'm thinking, man, the number of students that you guys are speaking into, that blows me away. I mean, just the thinking of this year, how many students God is going to use you to communicate to. And then you go 5 years out, 10 years out, like us combined, how many students is God giving us the privilege of getting to represent him to just by being a communicator and a writer? That is so incredible. And that that one thought alone made me back there go, oh my gosh, I'm just like, I'm so humbled just to get the chance to hang with y'all today, much less talk together. Anybody ever get tired of writing content? Anyone ever get frustrated? Anyone just want to own that? Dude, man, I do. I remember some of the worst days, especially when I first started. I would get so discouraged, and it wouldn't be like, man, we got a lot to do logistically. And it wouldn't be, man, there's a tough situation with a student. I'm like, no, dude, I thrive on this stuff. It wouldn't be on stage and I'm nervous. It would be Saturday night going, I have no idea what in the heck I'm going to say, and what I'm thinking about right now just stinks. And I'm just like, so frustrated in the pressure and the stress. And I think if there's ever been a day I wanted to quit, it was on Saturday nights for content. You know, some of you are like, yes. And it, you know, it's gotten so much better. In fact, a couple years ago, we actually talked about that at Orange Conference and how to get a rhythm in your prep. And I figured out my rhythm. But man, I still have the days. Like I was hanging out at our spring event in a host home. So we do like a D-Now kind of thing. We don't call it D-Now, but anyway, I'm in a host home and there's this guy, sophomore dude, who's got the total hipster haircut and he's riding on one like an Io Hawk around this host home with his like butt hanging out, men and everybody. And then I'm like, well, you're an idiot. And I'm just listening to him talk to some of the other boys that are in this group. And they were talking about girls and they were hooking up. I don't know if they heard me or noticed that I was hearing them, but I hear him go, yeah, you know, Jamie said that hooking up is good preparation for marriage. And I'm like, like, what? Excuse me. What did you say? You're like, yeah. You know, there's that talk where you said like impurity prepares you for intimacy. And I'm like, no, you dummy. It's purity. Like purity prepares you for intimacy. Oh my gosh. How long have you thought this? How many people have you taught? Whose parents do I need to call now? You know, like, golly, this pastor is an idiot, you know? And I'm just like, man. And you know, you have those moments where you're like, gosh, I really want my students to remember what I say and like get it accurately. You know, it's a little frustrating. But I think for most of us, the tension's deeper than like funny stuff like that. I mean, for me, and I know for you, the tension goes to more things like, I had dinner the other night with a student who's in college now. And I remember him, you know, obviously I was friends with him when he was in our student ministry. And I remember him being on a bad path. I remember telling him he was on a bad path. And then I lost touch with him. And he's sitting across the table from me at dinner. I have no idea what to expect. I just showed up. I'm like, of course, bro, I'll come to dinner with you. And he starts to tell me, yeah, I got on a bad path. I'm like, oh, okay. And I got addicted. Oh, wow, okay. I kind of saw it coming. But, you know, I got in trouble and I got arrested and I got busted and now I'm facing felony charges and I'm expelled. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, whoa. And dude, I just need Jesus, man. I'm like, okay, you know, this dinner just went from bad to amazing. And he said, dude, I remember being in the room and you were trying to tell me these things. I feel like I was there and you were trying to warn me, but I didn't listen. And so I walk away from this night. I didn't do anything. I showed up at dinner and said okay a bunch of times and prayed with him, you know, and he accepted Christ. But I'm, you know, it's just a God thing. But like, I walked away, one, pumped, obviously, but two, burdened, because I'm sitting there thinking, man, how many Ryans are sitting in my audience right now? You know, how many, there may not be drugs, but they're like a bunch of Ryans, guys and girls, just sitting out there. And it's like, how do I reach them? And that's the tension that we feel. Like, we feel the tension of, you know, like Matthew 7, when Jesus says, whoever hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, they're not just Jesus-y, they're not just spiritual. No, they're people building on the rock, because sand is everywhere and you feel it. You see it as a pastor or a communicator or a helper. You're like, there's so much sand and I don't want them to build on the sand. I don't want to see that house fall. I mean, but more than that, you feel, of course, the tension of the gospel, you know, that like, 2 Corinthians 4, there's actually the God of this age trying to blind the minds of unbelieving students to the gospel of Jesus. And here we are trying to be a crew that's like, no, we want to be revealers, man. You know, like we want to, like Paul said, like present Jesus. We proclaim him, teaching and admonishing one another with all wisdom so that we might present everyone. I mean, like all of them, I want to present all of them perfect in Christ. And to this end, I'm laboring, I'm struggling with all of his energy, which I hope is so powerfully working in me. I mean, that... And that's the tension. Like, we don't walk up on stage, obviously. We're not playing for applause or for laughter. We're like going up there saying, God, please, may, you know, my preparation together with your power, may my preparation plus your power, like, reach him. May it reach her. May it free him. May it save her. May it save them. God, please, just may this be more than just a Sunday talk. And I think that's the burden of doing what I think most of us in the room are involved in one way or another. That plus this fact, it's really hard. Isn't it? I mean, communicating, it's hard. Communicating weekly is hard, especially when you're writing. It's even harder not just to communicate and write weekly. Man, communicating weekly is hard. It's harder to do it in a way that actually lasts. It's harder even to do it in a way that goes beyond just something that's said on a Sunday to something that shows up on a Monday, like in lives. And that's, oh man, that's hard. But at Orange, we really do believe that if we're going to reach this generation, we have to become experts at bridging that Sunday-Monday gap. Like, we have to develop the skill and the technique to speak on Sunday in a way that helps students on Monday. To speak on Sunday in a way that not just helps students, but changes their minds or changes their behavior or changes their hearts or changes even their souls in some way on Monday.
And we are back with the Think Orange podcast. It is I, Joseph Sojourner, with our good friend Ben Crawshaw here today, talking about the idea of communicating to students who don't care. So, Ben, first off, I feel like you should introduce yourself a little bit about yourself as to people who don't know who you are, what you do, kind of what gives you this passion to talk about this topic.
Well, I like hanging out with teenagers more than I like being around adults. So that's really why I'm passionate about teenagers, is because I have the maturity level of one. And it's just nice, I think, to work in a profession where you know you're surrounded by people who are cooler than you. Mm-hmm. And you don't really say that doing adult ministry.
I wish y'all could see him right now, because he's lying. He looks great. He's in great shape, and he's got a great outfit on.
Well, you have a great outfit on as well. And I noticed on Sojo's sweatshirt, the K is backwards.
It is.
And then on your hat, the S is backwards.
It is.
That is, it's making it's my heart warm.
Is the way to go.
It's just drawing
in
me
17.
In. Yes, I love it. I love it.
So we're talking about this idea of communicating to students who don't care, which I'd imagine right now every youth pastor is thinking, yes, like, we understand what that looks like. And you're sitting in a group. You're sitting and talking to a student. They're clearly uninterested. They're not engaged at all. What kinds of challenges are kids facing today that might keep them from fully engaging that you've seen?
Well, everything. So, and you know it. If you speak to the same group of students week after week, you know how uninterested they are, how unengaged they are just by looking at them. Mm. And when I started communicating, I worked at a camp and I spoke to a different group of people who came in every week. So I did the same three talks. Different people come in, I perfected them, I'm refining them, and I'm like, this is easy. I mean, anybody can speak to students. Then I became a student pastor and spoke to the same 28, 30 people week after week, and I was like, this is awful. This is the worst thing a human being could do, is talk to the same group of teenagers who, you know, their prefrontal cortex isn't developed and they have raging hormones.
Yeah,
and it's like, that's a recipe for them not caring about what you have to say. And you know what else? They sit in a classroom for 8 hours a day and are told to sit still and be quiet and listen. And now they come to church and I'm telling them to be quiet, sit still and listen, because I'm going to talk to them about the Bible, a book that they don't understand, don't want to read, they think is boring. And I'm doing that this week after week after week. That is a tough gig.
Very
and if you're out there, you know it.
So what was young Ben like when growing up? Were you that student that trying to talk to you about the Bible? Or were you like, no, I was always fully engaged. Like I was one that always found this exciting.
No, I never cared. I never listened. I showed up and went to student ministry for the same reason that, you know, the students you and I, Sojo, have worked with.
Yeah.
That we like them, but we don't know why they're there every week, because they don't seem to care. Or maybe they don't care about us speaking. They care about girls or food or going on the trips or whatever. That was me. And I never wanted to be a student pastor. I didn't want to be in ministry. I got kind of duped into it. But as a communicator, when I started, my mom wrote my first couple talks for me. And I said, I don't know how to write a sermon. I don't know what you're supposed to say. So she wrote them for me and I memorized them like so a good script. And delivered those. And I was like, I'm crushing it. And then
thanks,
again,
Mom.
Now, and then I'm in a situation where I'm working at a small church and, you know, I'm speaking at the FCA, you know, student ministry, college ministry, leading a Bible study. And I was like, I do not know how human beings do this. It's just a tough job.
And you started small church, then we ended up working at huge churches. Now you travel around. You've seen students literally in every single part of the nation and probably abroad. So you use this term apathetic student. So for those who are thinking, okay, tell us more about that. What would you say? How does an apathetic student behave, guy or girl? Is there a difference?
Well, I'll kind of answer your question with a question is, as a communicator or as a student pastor to teenagers, think about the difference between your face and their phone. Okay. So when a student is sitting there with their phone in their lap and I'm preaching about reading God's word or I'm preaching about forgiveness, what is more interesting than the sound of my voice? Well, cat memes, Pikachus, Facebook posts from your grandma, Insta likes. I mean, forwarded emails from your mom to group forward emails. You know that. Everybody's mom just sends the forward, you know, forwarded political or religious emails. That probably may even be more interesting to a student than the sound of my voice. So it's not
this is real talk.
Necessarily apathy as much as it is just distraction.
That's good.
And I grew up in a time where, you know, we didn't feel all this pressure, you know, around homework and all this pressure around our grades. It seems like it was easier than some of the students that I speak to. You know, homework is a huge anxiety. Schoolwork is a huge anxiety. And there's a lot of pressure scholastically. So you go to school where you feel all this pressure and all, you know, you're aware of all these places where you're not measuring up. Sports. So we didn't practice on Sundays. We didn't play 100, you know, baseball games, travel ball in the summertime. It didn't work like that. So it wasn't like there were so many, pressure forces on us. But if you're 15 and you wake up and your mom tells you that you need to, you know, do your homework and clean your room, and then you go to school all day where you're, you know, kind of aware of all this scholastic pressure, and then you go to practice where, you know, coach tells you all the things you need to be working on, then you show up at student ministry and someone stands up and tells you another area where you don't measure up. And this is another thing that you need to work on and get better at. It's just, it feels like another pressure. Well, guess what? Teenagers have gotten pretty, you know, pretty proficient at tuning out pressures.
Oh, that's good. Now, when you talk, it's so clear you're just naturally engaging. You're funny to the youth pastor right now who's already thinking, this guy is charming. This guy is funny. I don't have his comedic ability. I've seen you talk so many times. You can literally send high school students cracking up, middle school students just connecting with you through humor. But to someone who's like, I'm not necessarily that funny, what would you say? How would you encourage them if you were sitting across a coffee table and they're like, I'm not funny like you. I can't dress like you, and I'm not as charming or have the depth. I mean, what would you say to them?
Well, number one, that's not what they're thinking. they're listening, thinking I should be on that podcast instead of this guy. You know, I can do it better than him. I would just say, I understand whatever part of the grind that you're in right now, whether it is like just getting started, trying to write talks, to kind of feeling bored, you know, with this process or worn out by it, or trying to develop and raise other communicators.
That's good.
I understand that process for any of you. So there was a point in time when I said, you know what? I really am passionate about seeing teenagers come alive in Jesus. But I speak to them and feel like they don't care what I'm saying. Mm. So I have two options, to give up or to fight back. And I said, if I'm going to do this, as hard as I was trying not to, I just couldn't seem to get out of it. It was like these doors were opening to me to talk to teenagers. If I'm not going to quit on this thing, then I want to get better. And so the first thing I started doing was writing down, after I spoke, something I learned when I spoke.
That's so good.
And it was always negative. Don't try to pray out at the end all the stuff you missed in your outline. Okay? You've done that.
And we've all done that.
Yeah, dear Lord, at point three, I just want to make sure everybody knows. And it's like, they're not paying attention when you pray at the end. They're thinking about what's next. Don't, I would engage a disruptive student and be so engaged, it would be distracting to everybody. So walk off. It's like, hey, don't engage a disruptive student. A story that you think you know. It's like, I've got this story. I've told it to my friends before. And then you get up and you're like, I don't even remember the details of this story. Mm. So I'd write down, practice stories out loud before you speak.
That's good.
And so forming this list of 25, 30, 35 things. I had a friend who's a student pastor at a camp I was speaking at. And he said, man, you don't ever smile when you speak. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because I tell jokes. I try to make it funny. He's like, no, you had one point where you smiled a little bit and it just, man, it let the air out. So I'd start paying attention to other communicators like yourself. Mm. And you smile and you're like, oh man, yeah, I feel like I can connect with that guy. Mm. Just little stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I started writing it down and trying to self-evaluate. Then I started getting other people involved in evaluation, which you know is a terrible, terrible world to walk into.
It stings.
It stings. And so just finding the people I could trust to peer into my communication, then started watching myself on video, which was the worst experience of my entire life, and listening to myself on audio, which I still won't do. I will not listen to this podcast when it's played back.
I still can't do it either.
I am going to say, no one's voice should sound like that. It sounds problematic is what it sounds like. But listening to myself and just really saying, the main thing, Sojo, that I had to figure out is who I was. Mm. So I'm around these communicators and I'm like, man, I hate myself because that guy, that girl, they're so great at engaging teenagers. And I want to do that, but I don't know how to do that. So I would make the mistake, a lot of us have done this, is trying to be like them. Mm-hmm. Trying to communicate. I heard Francis Chan speak one time and I was like, that guy had an entire room just eating out of the palm of his hand. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I should try to do, I can't, I couldn't pull it off. And so, you know, tried to be the like real, like big, loud speaker to students, and it's not me. And I really have, and this is, I mean, I started in 1998, have kind of identified who I want to be as a communicator to students. And I want to be an older brother that they trust.
That's good.
So I want to be, have some authority in their life. I'm not a parent. I'm not their small group leader. But I am an older brother that they trust, who I can speak to them a little more personally and speak to them a little more emotionally, because I want them to feel like, hey, he understands me. He gets what I'm going through. Because if a student feels like that, they feel like you understand them. Well, they don't feel like anybody understands them. Mm-hmm. They don't feel like their coach understands them. You know, they don't feel sometimes even like their pastor understands them or their teachers, parents, all this stuff. So I want them to be like, you know what? I think he gets me. I think he gets how weird I am. Mm. I think he gets how strange I think he gets how awkward I am when I try to talk to girls.
Mm. And what I love about what you just said was literally to the person who's feeling like I'm out of the game, I'm not connecting. You're saying that it's not about the fact that you don't care about these students. It's that there's practical steps you can take to actually engage. That engagement with students is a different category. And you can actually put some practices in to get better at engagement with students.
Totally. And you live in the world that, you know, lines up between art and purpose. Mm-hmm. So vision, meaning, calling in your life mixed with getting better at my art, better at my craft and what I do. And we can, you know, focus on one, neglect the other, but man, these are two powerful things that I think can come together. And then once you kind of realize, okay, this is my voice, that I am a Bible nerd, but I want to engage 15-year-olds with Bible nerdom, you know, that's great. Don't try to be somebody else,
yeah.
But don't give up on working on your craft. And then don't throw out the meaning and calling behind what you're doing, which is working with the next generation, because this process has worn you out so much.
So let's talk about the next generation. At what age would you say does it shift from the excited kid to the apathetic teen or preteen? When does that start, or when do you think that happens? And is that an accurate time frame, would you say?
Well, I can't speak to this scientifically, and there's a lot of people smarter than me, but here's what I know is I currently volunteer in the children's ministry, Upstreet, Brownsbridge Community Church. So I said, I'll do anything. Just lie to me about what time to be here, because I'm going to be here late. Okay? So they wanted me to be a storyteller. So naturally, they're like, oh, you're a communicator, so you tell stories. So when I get into talking to fourth and fifth graders, it's different. And I get a feeling that I get sometimes when I preach to middle schoolers. It's just they're not really in it that much, and they don't really care. Second graders are repeating after me, chanting, you know, doing all this stuff. Fourth graders, especially fifth graders, seem a little more uninterested. So my non-scientific answer to that would be somewhere around fifth grade.
That's good. So what would you say are some of the most helpful tools you've used when engaging students who seem to be uninterested? Like in your journey, what are some things that you've done when sitting in front of students who literally just are not connecting?
Yeah, so one of the main things that I do is identified what are the wins of communicating. Because that's also a difficult part of this is my mom. Okay. My mom, who gets up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to pray for hours. She is that lady who's just connected direct line to God. Okay. That makes all of us feel like we're terrible people. And in Christian world, if you pray early in the morning, you get like extra credit from God. That's like, those are like the bonus points.
Point. Totally.
Bonus. Oh yeah. Bonus. God is definitely listening to your prayers if they're that early. So my mom knows when I'm speaking to anybody. And so she'll text me, and she's done this from since she learned how to operate text message. How'd it go? Mm-hmm. I don't know. How am I supposed to know how it went? Like, I don't know that, you know, everybody stayed alive. Like that's a measure for a win. No one cried, negatively. I didn't slip up and say something inappropriate. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So you're trying to figure out what does gauge a win. I know if I'm speaking the last night of a camp and you do like an altar call, well, that's numbers based. Okay. Well, then what do you decide? Two is not enough. Only two people responded. That's not good enough. You need to have like 15 or 20. The guy who spoke here last year, he had 30 students come to the front. So, well, I don't necessarily want that to be the win. And so, you know, then you start asking people, well, how do you feel like that went? Oh, it was good. Yeah, it was
fine.
That's
what you're going to get.
Small group leaders. Yeah, my guys think you're funny. Well, is that the win? Funny? Is that the win of communicating? So I really wanted some clear wins. I ask your spouse. Well, your spouse is going to be super honest with you too early. You know, right in the game. No, you should have. Well, no, I'm too insecure to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. That was boring. No, don't tell me that was boring now. Tell me later. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm still too insecure for that. So identifying some wins. So one of them is that their face goes from their phone to your face. Their eyes go from their phone to your face. So when I'm having a conversation with somebody and they're on their phone and I know they're not listening to a word I say, then I got to say something that gets their attention.
Totally.
My wife, if she's, you know, zoning out, texting, I'm like, you know, there's a group of like 30 people, you know, today talking about how much they love your outfits. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, wait, who was in that room? And I'm like, I'm just kidding. I just have you engaged now. I needed to tell you something.
Yeah.
The point of that is people can be on their phone. They can be checked out. And I want to engage them. And that's one of the wins for me is not necessarily physically, but, you know, physically or metaphorically, I get their eyes, meaning I get their attention. I battle all the other stuff going on in their minds and in their surroundings. And I get these moments of time where they're listening and they're paying attention. I think scripture, another win is scripture going from dead to alive. And, you know, taking a passage of scripture and getting a 15-year-old to say, okay, that's me. that takes some work. And that was never a win for me early on. So I would read these long passages of scripture, yeah. or I would just read a verse and just blindly assume that a student knew that or care about that. You know, present yourself to God as a living sacrifice, and not realizing that's a weird thing for a 15-year-old. Unless you grew up all in church, I don't want to be a living sacrifice for yeah. anybody. That means I get murdered, you know? So bringing that to
life. I'm not looking to do that right now.
So I remember one time we were talking about, you know, the wall of Jericho, and I'm like, this is a crazy story, and it's long. I feel like if I were there and a teenager, I would be like, did this really happen? They walked around, blew a trumpet. They were all of a sudden victorious in battle. Like, that seems odd. So just had this point where, you know, setting up all the tension of them being outside this wall and the military difference. And I just paused there for a second. I said, you know what? I just want to ask you a question. What's your wall? Like, what's your wall in your life right now? What's the thing that you seem like, that just feels like it's so big and you cannot overcome it and you cannot defeat it? It's just defeating you. And you're looking at it saying, me versus that wall, I lose every time. So now it's like, okay, we're going to bring this to life a little bit.
Yeah.
Splitting that story up into some smaller sections of text and then bringing some humor to it so that people find this story interesting. So bringing the scripture from dead to alive is another win. And then another one is the point goes from Sunday to Monday. Mm. So I don't have a lot of students in my student ministry who struggle with smoking weed during student ministry.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sleeping around during youth group. Like, this stuff is happening at other times. You know, dealing with your little brother and sister, you don't have to do that at student ministry. You get to show up, play some games, hear some music. So I want the things that I talk about to resonate with them at the moments that they need it. Mm. So in these pivotal times, these moments of life decision, or even when they get home that night and the way they talk to their mom, I just want them to remember it. And so these are some of the wins for me. It's like, I want to engage them. I want to work hard to do that. And I want what I talk about for them to remember it. And so that's what I want. I want for these points to resonate with students and for them to remember it and be able to grab it at the moments when they need it, at the moments where they're faced with these, you know, decisions or this temptation or in their, you know, relationship with their mom at home. So when I sit and work on a talk, I want, you know, to get their eyes to go from their phone to my face. Not because it's me, but I want to engage them. When we get to this, you know, this powerful point of engaging them with scripture, I want them to still be listening, not having checked me out a long time ago. I want scripture to go from dead to alive. I want the truth to be illuminated in such a way that they may not do it, but they can't resist it. And I want the point to go with them the next day, and maybe even the day after that. I want it to stick with them. And if things don't fit within that, I try to eliminate. I try to eliminate, because students are not going to remember very much at all. They're going to remember something. If they remember something, you know, that passage, like, do not just be hearers of the word, but be doers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I would love the first part with the students. If they were just hearers of the word, that's a great start. I'm already doing way better than I feel like I've done in the past. But man, if we could not stop there and say, I want 15-year-olds who don't just hear it, but they actually do it. That's a big deal.
So we got to go to what you brought up twice now. And I let it go the first time, but I got to go ahead and jump on it now. Because cell phones, you brought it up twice as this being an ultimate distraction to the pastors who literally are so frustrated in this era of cell phones. What would you say to the pastor who's like, cell phones are my biggest enemy? I mean, what do you say to that? Because reality is they're not going anywhere. So what do you say in that aspect?
Well, I say if cell phones are your biggest enemy in student ministry, you're doing pretty good. So if you said parents are my biggest enemy or my senior pastor, then we need to talk. But if cell phones are the biggest battle you're facing, bigger than even your budget, your event budget.
That's true right there, the budget.
The budget. Then I would just say it doesn't matter. If you take up cell phones at the door and let them get them when they leave, or you let them have it, you still have to work hard to engage your students, especially when it comes to communication.
Ooh, that's good.
Because you know that students can look at you without listening to you, and they can listen to you without looking at you.
Ooh.
But you have to capture hearts, and that's on you. Mm. You can't. I try to leave and not make any excuses for what happens in a talk, in a student ministry service. Well, these students are just distracting. Nope, my fault. that's on me. And, oh, that one student, he's just so disrupt. You know what? That's on me. This is my responsibility. I'm not going to blame him for the fact that I don't feel good about this talk that I just gave. I want to line up with these wins. And if I did this, if I feel like I did these things or worked hard to do these things, I got to move on and not let, you know, let it just beat me up all night.
You're so good at being able to make it look back to us and say, hey, we need to take some ownership and saying, what are we doing the most that we can do? So if you're doing everything you're saying, if you're lining up the wins, if you're making sure that you're creating engaging messages and you're still seeing a student that's uninterested, what would you say as you're trying to influence an apathetic student, whether you're a parent or whether you're a leader? Well, how would you say you can do that without conflict? Because that's normally what they're all worried about. How do I finally engage this student? Now I got 90% that are paying attention, but 10% that aren't. How do I begin to confront those students without conflict? Because you just don't want to get in a fight with them.
Right. And, you know, a lot of it depends on the student and how long they've been there, how much, you know, they've opened up, how much of a relationship you have with them. But the truth is, probably for a lot of you that are listening, that was you as a student.
Yeah.
And how many student pastors have you met and I met that were, you know, they were rough in high school, or even if they went to church or they didn't, they were unengaged, uninterested. And it's almost as if you take that approach in student ministry, then God's going to get you back. Mm. He's going to say, oh yeah, remember all those years?
Remember all those.
Yeah. Now you're a student pastor. So that's total karma for you. So, but there is something to understand that it's not that every student pastor who loves the next generation of students and is passionately putting their heart and soul into keeping them in the game were people who were like that themselves in high school. That seems to be rarely the case. These are people who seemed uninterested and they seemed uninvolved, but they had leaders who just kept pouring into them.
Yeah.
Kept trying, kept showing up. And then it takes, sometimes something happens. Either they go on a trip.
It's true.
Bad circumstance that happens, you know, something, you know, difficult happens in their life. And now it's like, okay, you're the last connection I had to church. I need some help right now. And, or I'm getting married. You're the only preacher I know.
Yeah.
Will you come do this wedding? And, you know, you have that relationship that's built in and you just never know. But the truth is, outside of the students that you have a very close relationship with, and I'm talking like you'll probably be a groomsman in their wedding, guys that have led in a small group. You're right. There is not always a time to, you know, talk to people directly and say, hey, I'm going to call you out on something. But that is the case. And then you and I have both done that at times.
Oh, yeah. I think what I love about what you're saying is that I've literally talked to students that you've sat with. And what I found so pivotal about what they said was he believed in me, which I think as I talk to leaders all around, I tell them the same thing. You're going to run into those students that don't believe in themselves and therefore their actions line up with that. But I do think there's something special when we as leaders can look in their eyes and say, it's not that I'm mad at you. It's just that I'm disappointed because I don't know if you see what I can see. And yeah, you might be acting out in ways and I don't know why you're doing what you're doing, but can you catch a glimpse of what I can see? And I do think you can take these apathetic students the same way we do all the time and say, hey, I just want to tell you what I see. And maybe I want you just to hear that I think you can do X, Y, and Z. And you watch students that literally are like, why do you believe in me?
Totally.
why are you saying this to me? You know, like no one's ever even taken the time to say they believe in me.
Right.
Especially after I just did what I did.
Totally.
I was caught with weed. Why are you absolutely telling me you believe in me now?
And so if I were to look at that student, you make a great point and say, you know what? Here's what I think the problem is. And they're going to assume I'm saying, oh, it's my behavior, it's my actions, it's my apathy. I think the problem is you have a vision for your life that's too small. And what you may have never had in your life are parents who affirmed what you did. You may have been surrounded by people who constantly took shots at what you did. Or you may have some piece of yourself, that inner dialogue, where you are just cruel to yourself.
Yeah.
And what you've done is you've shrunk the vision of your life. But what I want you to know that I see, and I believe God sees, is a bigger vision for your future.
Wow.
And what does that look like? I don't know. Are you saying you're going to be a preacher or missionary one day? I don't know. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. Maybe you'll be a doctor. Maybe you'll be a construction worker. But I just want you to know that there's a bigger vision than you see for your future right now.
That's good.
And I see it, And I love it.
So you said when their eyes, when their faces are in their phones, that's one sign of apathy. Are there any other flags, red flags that pastors can look for, parents can look for to say, hey, I'm starting to see apathetic signs developing in the student or my kid?
Well, I think it depends on the church versus the unchurched student. I spoke recently and it was to an audience that they're just talking out loud while you're speaking and not talking to you. They're talking to each other. This is like audiences that, you know, they'll have their back to you and just acting as if you don't exist. And, you know, the student pastor was like, man, I'm sorry. You know, they're busy. They're, you know, there's a lot going on. And the purpose of this event is an outreach event. Mm-hmm. And so I said, what do you think? What do you think are the percentages? How do you think you're doing as far as reaching, you know, unchurched students in the community? He said, well, I think it's probably 30-35%. And I said, yeah, they don't know that they're supposed to sit down in church and be quiet.
Yeah.
They haven't been told, like, sit there, be quiet, it's time for Bible study, you know, Bible story time. So what I see in that kind of disruption from students is a sign that you're actually doing a great job.
It's true.
Because everybody wants to reach unchurched students until they're smoking in the parking lot, right? Mm. And everybody wants unchurched students to show up and preach to them until they are completely disruptive during your sermon.
Yeah.
So I said, that disruption, I think, is a reflection that you're doing a great job reaching students in the community who don't know they're supposed to be quiet when a preacher stands up on stage and starts preaching. Mm. So that's not necessarily a sign of apathy as much as just a sign of your audience and who you're reaching. I do think that for me, when students are getting to a point where they say, been there, heard that, don't care anymore, that's apathy.
Ooh.
So it is...
there, heard that, don't care anymore.
That's it. And they may not say the third part of that out loud, but been there, heard that, by nature of those two statements, you're saying, you know what, this isn't as big a deal to me anymore. And it is what we battle all the time in church, mm-hmm. which is the consumer-based approach to church, which is I show up, order on the menu, you deliver what I want, and I'm happy or I can critique it, versus, no, this was never about walls. This was not even about Baptist versus Methodist. This was a movement of people called the Way, and they cared about other people and they loved other people. And so that's when it's time to mobilize people on behalf of other people. Mm. And you've heard this before, but your friend hasn't. You've heard this before, but you know that sophomore that you hang out with at school, they haven't. And so, you know, trying to work so hard to get students to think externally and not just internally, that's a tough job, but I think part of battling that type of apathy.
Okay, so now we got to go to the big elephant in the room. You're trying to engage your students. You've got Twitter. You've got Facebook now. You've got Snapchat. You've got Instagram. You've got all these social media platforms. How important do you feel like it is, or for the leaders who are like, I feel like I need to be on these platforms. I need to be engaging my students here. Maybe if I engage them more on social media, they'd find me more likable on a Sunday. Like, how important is social media? And how much focus should we be giving it when we're looking at creating or connecting with those apathetic students?
Well, I'll say one thing, and I heard you say this one time to a group of leaders, is what's great about today is that in my day and age, you're going to go into ministry, you're going to be a pastor, a missionary, or a worship leader. Mm-hmm. But now we know people who are working full-time in ministry doing social media.
Yeah.
We know full-time videographers,
it's true.
Photographers, people who are managing social media accounts for artists, individuals, churches, nonprofit ministry organizations. So part of it for me is just this vision thing. I would want to establish some type of social media presence.
That's good.
For my student ministry so that there were students in there who could see that. Again, as part of a bigger vision for the future, they understand, hey, this is a job somebody could take mm-hmm. for this in the future. The other opportunity that things like social media, tech stuff does, it gives you an opportunity to engage a student that wouldn't be engaged otherwise.
That's true.
So every student we want to engage, well, they have to be Bible storytellers in, you know, our elementary age ministry. Well, you got students who are petrified of that. Well, they got to serve in this way. No, you could show up at student ministry, and part of how you serve could be helping our student ministry social media account. That's a great opportunity. I think as far as like small group leaders, for most of them, they're texting with their students. I think that's the way to go. But from a student ministry standpoint, I think utilizing some form of social media is a great just example to show to your students. And then you just never know. You never know. Like, let's say you tweet out the bottom line or the verse that you really landed on. And, you know, a student is scrolling through, maybe getting slaughtered on social media, or more likely they're just frustrated by the lack of likes or something like that. And they come across a verse that you've posted. You just never know when those moments are going to connect.
Yeah.
And we just, I believe, want to try different ways to bring a message to students outside of just someone standing on stage preaching.
And social media is a perfect platform, because there's a lot of programs that say we're going to leverage our social media for their voice, and we're going to begin to tell their stories through their social media, and we're going to show highlight reels of their events through their eyes. And so you get to see a flashback of here's what happened when we went out to the mountains, and you get to see so they can share it with their friends. Or someone who will say, I really love that video, that funny video that Ben posted on YouTube that happened at that last event they did. So you start to get to see that it's much wider. It kind of gives an identity to what you're trying to do, a greater story kind of the whole of what the whole program's goals are. When you start establishing the wins of your program, social media could be an ally to that more than just yourself. I think a lot of times we think, well, how do I got to increase my presence on social media? And it's like, no. What is your programs? What's the story your program's telling? You know, and so how we can kind of communicate that. But I love that. But do you ever think that there's a point the students just grow out of attitude problems? I mean, if you had to say, looking at it through your journey, that you're just like, hey, looking at this parallel of students to adults, there's just a point where they're going to grow out of it.
Well, I would ask you this. Have any of us grown out of our attitude problems?
It's true.
I mean, are neighborhood moms as catty on Facebook as teenage girls? Do adult dads struggle with feeling like they measure up as much as a 15-year-old guy does? This is life. What you have the opportunity to do is to connect with these people at a time when they remember it, because you don't remember what you did last week, but you can remember stuff that happened in high school. I tell you, 2 songs ago, what were you listening to? I don't know. What'd you listen to in high school? You can tell me. We just remember things that happen. And this is a time where most of what, you know, for teenagers, most of what is validated, affirmed, encouraged in them, it comes from peers. It comes from the influence around them. It's not necessarily guardianship and, you know, people who are authorities like it was when they were kids. They're looking to peers. They're looking to influence. So this is a time when relationships are huge. This is the eve of the drop-off, which is college-age students and just the great fade and the great gap. So you have an opportunity to be there in those last few moments before they're faced with an entire different set of temptations, particularly as it pertains to their faith.
Wow.
All of that happens when people are teenagers, but the attitude problems don't go away. They change, they modify. God gets a hold of some and some more pop up. There is a dependence on God that all of us need. And the best way for us to acknowledge that is just by looking within ourselves at our own problems and just saying, you know what? That's another sign to me that I need Jesus in my life. I would be saying the same thing to adults that I would be to teenagers on that.
So good. What I love about everything you said today is you don't just talk about it. You literally walk the walk, put your money where your mouth is. So I'd love for you to talk about resources that might be able to help people as they're moving towards dealing with apathetic students. Like, what could I do to create more engaging content, more engaging way to communicate for the student? And I know one in particular is one that's near and dear to your heart, but I'd love for you to kind of share.
Yeah. So again, when I talked about, early on, communicating, people will say, man, you're kind of like a natural communicator. And I'd say, there are some musicians that are just natural musicians. They pick it up and it's like they can play guitar. That wasn't me as a communicator. It was not natural. I was like the kid trying to play the drums and didn't know, the difference between a kick and a cymbal. Probably still don't. But after 10 years of playing the drums pretty bad, it was like, okay, this is starting to not sound so terrible. That's my track record of speaking. And so after a decade, I was like, oh, this isn't awful. But that's what gave me this passion when it comes to people out there who are in the grind, week after week, speaking to the same group of students, of trying to put some pieces together. What are some helpful resources for them? What are some ways they can think about an on-ramp? How do you on-ramp students into a talk in a way that gets them interested? What's an off-ramp? How do you set them up to go out and remember on Monday what you said on Sunday? So speaking to students, it's a digital product, so it's not paper and books that you get in the mail or you buy at the store. It's all downloadable. So it's delivered to you. But the purpose of it really is threefold. It's number one, it's for communicators who want to go to the next level. So this offseason, LeBron, he's going to be working on some part of his game. And coaches who are coaching college sports teams or high school sports teams in the offseason, they're going to work on some part of their coaching or motivation to get better. I think as communicators, we should be doing the same thing. As opposed to giving up and blaming, we should be working on parts of our game to get better.
That's good.
Number two, it's for those of you who want to train other communicators or raise up younger communicators. I'd been speaking 15 years and still didn't know how to train somebody else to do it. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I could listen to you speak and it didn't sound very good, but that's not helpful to you. And you can't over critique them because you don't want to crush them.
No.
You give them opportunities before they're ready, but you don't want to continually give them opportunities because you got to protect your own, you know, kind of the reputation of your student ministry.
Attention, yeah.
So it was hard for me to know, what can I just sit down and talk with communicators about? Preparing, making your talk more interesting, how to getting it to stick, how to get your heart ready before you talk about that. Speaking to students helps you raise up volunteer, outside, or younger communicators, younger leaders.
That's good.
And then I think for people who want to expand their platform, and when I say platform, what I'm saying is just the unique experience of you and your community, the students you've worked with, your background, and you may say, I feel like there's a message in me that I want other students to hear about. Well, you know, we're kind of limited by resources or network. It's like, I speak and I want to speak more. Nobody knows about me. So they don't know that I have a heart for this and a vision to do this. And so, you know, we wanted there to be a place where we could identify that there's great communicators out there, other parts of the country, other parts of the world. And this will give us the place where we can see them. And, you know, the access to places like Orange and North Point and Big Stuff and high school camp, being able to see some great communicators out there and recommending them to places like this, there's just not a place for that to happen.
And that's good.
I think there are people out there that they do want to be able to go different places with that message that God has placed on them and even make money doing that. And it's like, oh, I can't believe you just talked about speaking to teenagers and making money. Well, it's not a lot. Okay. So let me just go ahead and put your mind at ease. You're not going to be, we're not talking about a lot of money at all, but for you, just like, man, I have a passion, not just for my students, but for students in general. I want them to hear these pieces. Speaking to students is a part of that as well. And it just, I think, keeps us from feeling so lonely doing this week after week and just frustrated.
So now what's that called again?
Speakingtostudents.com. So it's all one word. Speaking to T-O, not the number two, the letter two, speakingtostudents.com. It's right there. You download it and you can get started immediately. That's what we love about it. It's not inventory and ship and when is it going to show up and all this stuff. It just happens right there. You get started or you get someone else started, or you train somebody else at a church who just got started. We've got satellite campuses and we just planted another church and they have a student ministry of two. Well, I would love to set up a communicator to do this. I just talked to a girl here who's been speaking twice a month. And she's like, I didn't know. I would just open the Bible and start talking and give it to them like it is. And I was like, well, that works if they're super excited about you doing that. And if they're showing up on a Wednesday night thinking, man, I hope she's just, you know, hitting me with God's word upside my head. But most teenagers aren't showing up thinking that. Mm. And so working through how to engage, how to build this on-ramp and this off-ramp, and just kind of little tips and tricks from different communicators to help. And I don't pretend that I have everything to say when it comes to speaking to teenagers. So we've tried to pull from, you know, a diverse background, age, race, gender, so that people are hearing from people who have been working in different student ministry settings to be able to help people who are just in this grind week after week.
Well, Ben, thank you so much. If someone wants to stay connected with you, where's the best place for them to stay connected with you at?
My home mailing address. They can shoot me a letter over and
a handwritten letter.
Yeah, I'll look at it and maybe we can become pen pals. So I'm on Twitter at BeanCup16. At BeanCup16.
BeanCup16.
Yeah, it's a nickname my mom gave me. Po Folks. Y'all ever eat at Po Folks growing up?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've never ate there.
They would sell cups of beans. And so I just loved them. Ferociously. And my mom just started nicknaming me Bean Cup. So Bean Cup 16, I would love to hear from you.
Well, Ben Crawshaw, thanks so much for hanging out with us at the Think Orange podcast.
Love it.
Talk to you later.
Wow, that was some amazing stuff. Both Jamie and Ben just were absolutely crushing that. I learned so much as a dad, because I got to be honest and tell you that there are so many times when I'm talking to my kids and I get that blank stare, or I have to say, put your phone down.
I know exactly how they feel talking to you.
Oh, really? Can you put your phone down and just engage? No, you love this sort of stuff. You're so good at doing this. What did you think of what you just heard?
Oh, my goodness. I think that if I would have been told this 10 years ago, I probably would have been a much better teacher sooner. I think it's so relevant and it's helpful, and there's not very many people talking about it.
Yeah.
I love the idea that every single student talk. I think what we have to remember is sometimes we focus so much on what we're saying, we don't focus on how we're saying it, that students are going to miss it. And I think that what Jamie and Ben talk about, that there's three wins in every student talk. And the first one is getting students' eyes from their phones to your face as a communicator, which is super difficult to do because you have to be saying something they actually care about more than they care about the girl next to them, you know?
Yeah.
Taking the passage from dead to alive. So making the what you're teaching come to life and make it relevant in their life so they actually care about it.
Yeah.
And lastly, when they talked about pushing your point from Sunday to Monday, like how does this actually matter in my Monday?
Yeah. So helpful. So helpful. Literally what they just did was they Shark Weeked your communication in your church. Because basically the reason we watch Shark Week is because it's so interesting.
True.
About something we otherwise probably don't think about unless we're swimming in the water or we live in Australia. But basically what Ben and Jamie are saying is you need to spice up everything that you say. And one of the things that I love most was I think sometimes as communicators, we get into this habit of looking for the people who are nodding, taking notes, maybe standing up and waving a hanky and saying amen. But what he's talking about from a kid point of view is just getting them to put their phone down and connect with you, make that eye to eye contact.
Right.
Reducing it down to just that and knowing that that has massive impact. That means so much. Yeah. I thought that was super practical and helpful.
Yeah, I was also thinking specifically about middle school students. Sometimes them having their phone in their hand and it looks like they're not listening, but that actually is what helps them listen. It's like a fidget spinner, but their phone. You know, something to do with their hands so they're not touching each other.
I have a fidget spinner.
I'm sure you do.
It's so helpful. Yep. It's so helpful. Well, we hope that you enjoyed today's podcast. Lots of practical stuff there. So if you know anybody who is a communicator who speaks with students on a regular basis, this is the perfect podcast for you to share with them. Are you going to share it with some people?
Oh, yeah. I love this topic.
Yes. I absolutely
know
you will.
And Shark Week.
Yes. I know you'll share both of those things. The easiest and best way for you to do that is to subscribe. Leave a review as well. Wherever you are listening to this from, just leave a review there. Make sure you subscribe. Hit that. In fact, I want you to smash that subscribe button. You are hitting it so many times. Share it with a friend. And if there's anything practical in here that you loved or you want to find out a little bit more about Ben and Jamie, all you need to do is check out our show notes. And Ashley, where can they find the show notes?
ThinkOrangePodcast.com.
You are crushing that. You are Shark Weeking this podcast.
Thank you so much.
You are doing a fantastic job. Hey, we're so glad that you joined us. We can't wait to have you join us next week as we continue this amazing pod. And remember, when you think next generation, think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.